From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, November 5th, 2018. And on this day, we'll have a last-minute roundup of what Mainers will be voting on tomorrow and what they'll need to vote last minute. And a conversation about the new film Dawn Land on the Maine Wabanaki State Child Welfare Truth and Reconciliation Commission. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
In case you haven't heard, there's an election tomorrow. Some say it is the most important one since the last one. There is a lot at stake in Maine. There's three congressional seats on the ticket. So is the contest to decide who will replace outgoing Republican Governor Paul LePage. And every single seat in the Maine legislature is up for grabs. We've brought in political correspondent and Augusta Bureau Chief Steve Missler to give us one last overview of the races and also to talk about why some of those races will be decided differently than others. Steve, I know there's a lot on the ballot, but just the top of ticket races, what are the big races and what do we know about them?
Nora, let's just start with a congressional contest and let's go straight to the 2nd Congressional District, one of the most heavily watched races in the country, because it could determine whether Democrats can take power in the House of Representatives, an outcome that will have big consequences for President Trump. Not only is it the largest district east of the Mississippi, but it's also very peculiar. If you recall, President Trump made history there 2 years ago when he swiped an electoral vote, a remarkable achievement given that President Obama won handily there twice. But those results sort of affirmed what we already know, that the 2nd CD is a swing district. Democrats have won there and Republicans have won there. Now, a Republican, Congressman Bruce Poliquin, is trying to hold the seat amid the prospects of a Democratic wave election. Poliquin has incumbency on his side. No incumbent has lost since 1916. But he's got a tough challenger in Democrat Jared Golden, a state lawmaker and combat veteran. Polls show that this is a very tight race, and there's tons of money pouring in to influence the outcome. There's also two independents who could affect the race, especially since voters will be using ranked choice voting. That means the winner will need to get a majority vote to win.
And we'll talk more about ranked choice in just a moment. But first, give us a quick rundown of the other two congressional races.
Sure. So there's a three-way contest in this 1st Congressional District where Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree has held the seat for a decade. She's facing a familiar foe in Republican challenger Mark Holbrook, who she beat easily 2 years ago during a GOP wave election. But also on the ballot is Marty Grohman, a former Democratic lawmaker who is now running as an independent. There hasn't been a lot of money in this race, which is a big contrast to the 2nd CD. Which could be a signal that Pingree is in a good position, but you just really never know with ranked choice voting, which could benefit Grohman. And finally, we have the U.S. Senate seat, where independent Angus King is looking for his second six-year term. He's facing Republican Eric Brakey and Democrat Zach Ringelstein. Again, it looks like King, the incumbent, is in control, but Brakey and Ringelstein have really tried to liven up the race, oftentimes getting into a battle with one another instead of focusing on King.
And then, of course, we have the race for governor. We had four candidates, but now we have Democrat Janet Mills, Republican Sean Moody, and Independent Terry Hayes. I think a lot of us are wondering how this race is going to shake out. What do you have to tell us?
Well, there hasn't been a lot of good, reliable polling in this race, so it's really tough to say. I've just sort of worked on the assumption that it's neck and neck between Mills and Moody. And Mills, who could be the first woman elected governor of Maine, and Moody, who is basically vowing to continue LePage's legacy. Both are making big barnstorming pushes across the state, and both are focused on each other. That's not to say that Terry Hayes won't be a factor. And when I say factor, I mean she could affect the outcome even if she doesn't win. That's because unlike the congressional races, there's no ranked choice voting in this contest. So that means votes for Hayes could determine whether Moody or Mills end up in the governor's office next year, even if she doesn't win. And Mills' supporters are very worried about what's known as the split vote. They've been running ads saying that votes for Hayes are effectively votes for Moody because of the spoiler effect or the split vote. Meanwhile, Republicans appear to be encouraging the split vote by saying Hayes and Mills are essentially the same, liberal politicians.
So, yeah, spoiler votes. We thought maybe a few years ago we wouldn't be hearing about these so much. But as it turns out, we are only using ranked choice voting in the congressional contest, not the gubernatorial or the legislative elections. What's going on with that?
We don't have a lot of time here to get into the reasons why, but basically the Maine Constitution has made it so ranked choice voting won't be used in the gubernatorial or legislative races, but it will be used in the congressional ones. That means voters will be allowed to rank their candidates in order of preference in the congressional races, but they'll vote the old-fashioned way in the gubernatorial and legislative ones. Also, ranked choice voting could also mean that we won't know the winners for some time if nobody gets a majority on election night. And that's barring any legal action that could take place if one of the candidates challenges whether ranked choice voting can be used in any of the contests. And that's a possibility, especially in the second CD, where the race is expected to be very tight.
We've heard nationally about a lot about voter turnout and how it's expected to be pretty high in this election. I understand Maine is usually one of the most engaged states in terms of voter turnout, but there are a lot of people who are eligible to vote who haven't voted. Are those people out of luck, or can they still register to vote?
Well, first, you're right to point out that Maine is one of the highest voter participation rates in the country. In 2016, more than 73% of eligible Maine voters turned out on Election Day. And it was lower in the 2014 midterm election, which is what this is, about 60%. But that's relatively normal for midterms when turnout is historically lower. Now, you asked about new voters. Maine is one of 16 states that allows what's called same-day voter registration. That means people who are eligible to vote can register on Election Day and then vote. You need to answer a few basic questions, such as whether you're a U.S. citizen. You also need to provide your address. And while you don't need a photo ID to vote in Maine, it's helpful to have your driver's license. And if you don't have one of those, you'll be asked to provide the last four digits of your Social Security number or a Maine ID card. But that's really all you need to vote on Election Day if you haven't before.
All right. That's our Augusta Bureau Chief, Steve Missler. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nora.
The documentary Dawnland tells the story of Native American children who, for the better part of the 20th century, had been taken from their families and placed in foster care with white families. The film also tells the story of the first Truth and Reconciliation Commission for Native People, which was launched in Maine. Dawnland airs nationwide tonight as part of the PBS series Independent Lens. On today's Maine Calling, host Jennifer Rooks spoke with Don Neptune Adams, a Penobscot who was taken and placed in foster care by the state of Maine. She also spoke with Esther Ann, a Passamaquoddy who served on the commission, and with filmmaker Adam Majo, who says the inspiration for the film was a news story on the commission produced by Maine Public Radio more than 5 years ago.
At the time, we were doing a lot of teaching around genocide through our organization, the Upstander Project, and a film we made called Coexist. We would say we were teaching about genocide in a faraway place in Rwanda through this film, Coexist, but we also want to acknowledge genocide in our own country's history. And we would talk privately about wanting to do more to teach about that and learn about that. So when we heard about the TRC in Maine, it seemed like a golden opportunity to be able to do that.
I want to bring Don into the conversation. Don, you're one of the people who testified before the TRC, and that experience is captured in the film Dawnland. What was the experience like for you? Did you know right away when you heard about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that you wanted to testify, or did you have to think about it?
Oh, goodness, no. I had to think about it. I was asked to give a public statement by someone I trusted, someone who was a friend. I was reluctant. I didn't want to open that can of worms. I was kind of scared of the healing process that I would have to go through in order to be able to talk about it. In the end, it ended up being a very positive experience for me. And I hope that it's going to help people.
Well, we're going to hear a clip from the film. And Don, this is you. You have up to this point told the commission about the white woman you were placed with and how she washed your mouth out with soap for speaking your native tongue. And then you come back to your tribe.
After being in my foster home for so long and not being able to even admit to being Penobscot or talk about it or be curious about it or anything. I was like, yes, I'm finally Penobscot again. And I was going to my first powwow, and I did nothing but hide because I didn't know how to dance. I think that's the biggest thing for me is the loss of identity. How people going from one world to another. They don't belong in either. They don't feel like they belong in either. My foster mother told me that I was at her house because nobody on the reservation wanted me, and that I was there out of the goodness of her heart. And that she would save me from being Penobscot.
You know, that's really hard to listen to. And Dawn, I want to ask you, do you still feel that way? Do you still feel torn?
Oh, it really is hard to listen to. I don't even recognize the person that I was when I gave that statement. I feel like I've come so far through this healing process I've been pushed into. I do still feel torn. It's always there in the back of my mind. I feel sometimes that I have to ask permission to be there, you know, to be in those circles, to exist as a Penobscot person when it's really all in my head. And it was placed there in foster care.
Esther, you sit with many of the people giving the testimony. These are the people you love. These are your friends. And you're sitting there holding their hands and holding them as they are obviously going through a lot of pain.
I know in this process we had a lot of fears. Even in 2008 when we started talking about it, we were really afraid what it was going to look like, what the impact was going to be, how difficult it was going to be for people to share initially, and then how they would feel after. We were afraid of all of that. So it is hard, but being a Native person is hard. And there's so much grief and trauma, but there's so much strength and beauty and joy, and that's what we hang on to.
Adam, what are you hoping people come away with after seeing Dawnland?
You know, we hope that people will see Wabanaki people and hear Wabanaki people and listen to Wabanaki people and understand what we, as settlers, have done to contribute to their oppression and to their colonization, the ongoing colonization that people like me perpetuate. And we also say, you know, I say that without trying to shame or blame. It's not about shame or blame or making people feel guilty. It's about seeing it. And as Kistanamuk has said, one of the commissioners of the TRC, for people who see the film or who learn about the work that Reach and the TRC have done, now you know. And let's make it so that the next generation of settlers cannot say, I didn't know.
That's Maine Calling's Jennifer Rook speaking with Esther Ann, Dawn Neptune Adams, Adam Mejo, the filmmaker of the documentary Dawnland, which airs nationwide tonight on the PBS series Independent Lens. You can also hear the entire Maine Calling program at mainecalling.org. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, November 5th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.